This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What's up, Panther fans? Welcome to another podcast episode of the Four Man Rush. Today, you got myself, Will, Country Kev, and JD, Panthers Den on Twitter. Today, we're going to update you with the latest Panthers news that's going on since the game, big win at Arizona yesterday. And we'll take a look at our upcoming family reunion game against Ron Rivera and the Washington football team. I'm going to apologize in advance. I'm probably going to refer to them as the Redskins multiple times throughout tonight. So no offense to anybody. It's just, you know, kind of been built in my head over the years, just calling them the Washington Redskins. So let's get started with some Panther news. Today, Matt Rhule announced that Cam Newton's going to take the majority of the practice reps at quarterback to try to get him up to speed with the offense as quick as possible. I'll start with you, Kev. Do you think Cam Newton's going to be ready to be a full-time starter this weekend in Washington, or do you think we'll see kind of a similar setup with P.J. Walker taking a bulk of the snaps and just gradually increase Cam Newton's reps over the next couple of weeks?
Well, it's that question right there is really more so of what I think going to happen versus what I think should happen. What I think should happen is that we used a formula that just worked real good this past this last game again, you know, at Arizona. Now, I totally get that in order for Cam to get his time and his chemistry, he definitely has to have more reps. So I definitely can get that. I'm just at the mind frame of, like, I get the excitement of Cam coming back, but I just don't want to rush it because, you know, this time last week, Cam admitted himself, you know, he was at home eating a bowl of cereal playing with the kids, you know. And NFL defenses, they are 10 games in, so you got to be on point. You know, a half-second delay one way or the other could result in a turnover, you know, that could take the momentum of the game away. So, you know, I've definitely been a fan of just, you know, bringing Cam along, you know, since steadily, but, you know, at the same time not rushing it. And I was perfectly fine with P.J. Walker getting another opportunity to show what he can do, because the way this offensive line is playing, the way this defense is playing, game management at the quarterback position, I feel would have been enough to put us in a position to win. Now, that's what I think should happen, but what's going to happen, you know, let's you know, the media is going to have a field day with this. You know, Cam Newton makes his home debut against his former coach Ron Rivera and several former teammates. So I get it, you know, the drama, the excitement, you know, the justification of the ticket prices being jacked up through the roof from what it was a week ago, you know, for a lot of y'all that I've heard, you know, have something to say about it. Me and JD was chatting about that before we came on here. But you know, Cam, there's not a defense really out there that Cam hasn't seen. Like you stated before, Will, it's still cover one, cover two, cover three. It's still zone blitz. It's still, you know, green dog blitz. You know, it's still the same things that he's seen, you know, thousands of times over and over. It's just more so I'm just concerned. I just want to give him enough time to where he get his chemistry and timing down with his wide receivers, skill players, you know, getting used to the cadences. You know, I just don't want it to be a rush process, but I get why he's getting a majority of the reps, because that's just the way it's going to go to get him ready.
Now, JD, I know you've had a chance to watch the film and break down both Cam and P.J. Walker. Talk a little bit about what you saw. Number one and number two, what do you expect to, what would you like to see happen this upcoming Sunday?
I think PJ deserves a lot of credit for how he played. He played a very mature game of football. Did have a turnover and two fumbles that kind of drove his grade down for me. But I think it's not a bad thing if PJ gets the lion's share of the reps again. Bring Cam on slowly, because when Cam comes in, I want him to be 10 toes down, pedal to the metal, no limitations. This is your show now. And I think that's what Rhule is thinking by giving him the opportunity to start for to fight for the starting job next season. He's not bringing him here just to kind of carry us through in packages only. So if not this week, for Cam Newton, especially given how explosive he was last game, only 9 snaps accounted for 14 points. So if Cam doesn't score those 2 touchdowns, it's a totally different outcome possibly. So I think even though Rule wants Cam to start as soon as possible, and that's pretty much obvious, and how fitting it would be for him to start against his old coach with all the former Panthers there back in Charlotte for the first time, I think you have to stave that off a little while. And even if you want to give him that start, just put him in for the first snap and then go back to what we did last week. I think it's going to take Cam a little while to get back acclimated to the timing routes. And I think it's going to take Cam a little while to get back into the groove of things as far as down to down, down to distance stuff. Even though he's a vet guy, the amount of reps he can take during the week is still limited. He's not a spring chicken anymore, and that recovery is still going to be a thing. They don't want to burn him out preparing for the game, and then game comes and now he's not 100%. So I would rather ease him in slow. And I think if he doesn't start in the next 2 games at versus Washington versus Miami, there's a bye week after that. So after week 13, it's going to be all systems go Cam Newton ship.
Right. I think, he's a veteran player. So I know, coverages don't change. Route concepts don't change. I think, this processing will be the same. He'll be able to know where to go with the football. He knows how to throw the football, when to throw it. The timing, like JD said, is going to be off. That's the we saw that a little bit yesterday as well, on that go route to DJ Moore. It was a little bit late. The slant route was a little bit behind him. That's expected when he's, been sitting on it, been at home, hasn't really been playing with these guys for a lot. But, practice reps, he's played with DJ before. He's played with C-Mac for a couple years. Maybe it won't take him that long to get up to speed, get that rhythm back, and, be able to start as early as Sunday. I mean, that touchdown pass was a pretty difficult throw on that out to Robbie Anderson. I mean, that was a well-timed, well-placed ball there. He's going to be a factor in the running game, so we can probably see another heavy dose of that this week against Washington. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him be named the full-time starter, by the end of this week, just considering the direction Matt Rhule looks like he wants to go with this. Let's move on to the next topic. I know, Kev, you had made a post earlier today about the improvements of the offensive line from weeks, 7 through 10 versus the first 6 weeks. Can you talk about what you've seen from the O-line over the past few weeks, and if we've finally found the right mix of linemen to use from this point going forward?
Yeah, one of the things that I like to do when I'm, looking up the, Planet Trenches is, with Big Smooth, he does the film work aspect of it. I like doing the statistical side of it. And what I notice is that ever since left guard Michael Jordan has been inserted into the starting lineup, he got his first start week 6 home game against the Minnesota Vikings, as y'all know, which we lost in overtime 34-28. That was week 6. But ever since then, it just seems like his play has really helped infuse the offensive line to be more nasty, be more physical, be more aggressive. And with the current group of starters that's in, that seems to have been doing a majority of it, now we have, Trent Scott, who's been played left tackle, right tackle. He's now firmly been entrenched at right guard, has been playing at a very high level. We got, like as I mentioned, Michael Jordan at left guard. Dennis Daly at left tackle. Wasn't his best game. He had 3 very frustrated penalties. 1 false start, 2 holding penalties that really were kind of like momentum killers, really set us in long situations. I believe on 1 drive, he had a false start and a holding on the same drive, responsible for 15 yards just by himself. So, Definitely Dennis Daly. I'm just thinking that he's more suited as guard than tackle. I just really haven't seen enough to feel confident that he can perform consistently at a good enough level at left tackle. Then the question is, well, is he playing better than Cam Mervin? Yeah, but how high of a bar is that you're setting as a comparison of effectiveness? You know, that's just how I see it. But, you know, when, you know, looking at the numbers, what came out, you know, something that we like to use here to analyze offensive line play is run block pass rate, run block win rate and pass block win rate. And what a win rate is in the trenches is the ability of, for example, run block and pass block win rate is when the offensive line, each blocker is able to maintain his assigned block for at least 2.5 seconds or longer. And when it comes to that, the Panthers, for the first 6 weeks, they were pretty much dead last with both. They was averaging 31st in pass blocking and 30th in run blocking, you know, weeks 1 through 6. That just that's pretty much where they were. And heading into, you know, this week, you know, the Panthers, they were, let me take a look. Says here that far as pass block win rate here, the Carolina Panthers were 26. Excuse me, that's run block win rate. We had 26, ranked 26. And as pass blocking, we're up to, let me take a look here. Looks like 28. So when you look at it, that doesn't sound like a huge jump, but when you just look at the last 4 weeks, you know, the Panthers, pass block, run block, just the last 4 weeks from week 7 to week 10, the Panthers have been, will be the 11th best run blocking team win rate and the 8th best pass block win rate team, just in the, if we just only measured for the last 4 weeks. So that's just how bad our line play was the first 6 weeks, that even though we've been playing top 10 offensive line caliber blocking the last 4 weeks, we dug such a big hole the first 6 weeks that the progress, when you look at the statistical chart, doesn't really seem like much. So, you know, even though it counts, I'm just looking at it as from, you know, week 7 up to now, because I'm starting to see the consistency. Week after week, we've only given up one sack in the last 3 weeks, which is saying a lot. Also, you know, when Chris McCaffrey was running the ball, he was getting 2, 3, sometimes 4 yards before a defender was even able to get a hand on him. So overall, that's just showing that this offensive line unit is starting to gel. And I think the attitude, the nastiness, the aggression of left guard Michael Jordan, who we picked up off the practice squad from the Bengals, has lit a match up under this offensive line unit, and I'm here for it.
Another thing we noticed in the last game, I mean, our receivers had their ups and downs all year. I think we led the league in drop passes at one point. JD, when you were watching the QB evaluations the past couple weeks, did you see a notice in the change in the energy of the wide receiver group, and you think it's going to be more of what we're going to see going forward the rest of this year, especially with Robbie Anderson?
I think the four wide receivers, the throw being on time in the pocket, meaning like right in the numbers, hitting the numbers, throw on, kind of help Robbie and DJ get their momentum going. Quick slants, a lot of them from PJ, trying to beat the Arizona Cardinals corners quick. Also led to us not giving up any sacks that game. So I think the passing game and the wide receivers specifically are going to benefit from the ball being thrown a little bit more fast. Sam Darnold had a lot of plays where he sped himself up, and in speeding himself up, he actually slowed himself down to the throw. So I think for our guys and the decision and go and not overthink. Being able to trust the instincts of Cam is going to help them get a momentum going. And hopefully that rhythm will keep going, not only in the pass game, but in our more intermediate route combinations. So I think the change of quarterback is definitely going to show a difference in our wide receivers, not trying to catch throws that are behind them or trying to catch late throws, being thrown hospital balls. I think that has changed. That's going to change with these quarterbacks, and that's something we can look forward to.
Now, Kev, I know we've been hard on Pat Elflein most of this year. I've seen him have a pretty good game against Arizona last week. You think he's found a home at center, or do you need to see a bigger sample size?
I definitely want to see a bigger sample size, but I will say that his initial test coming out the blocks with his started center. For those of y'all who haven't checked it out yet on Twitter, just go to 4MR Smooth's account, and you know he has the breakdown of each one of the Panther linemen's individual games. And I think for Elflein, his grade, well, I think he had him like, I think it was like the third best. I think it was like mid-70s, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, for me, it's just shocking that a player who played so horribly at left guard could just move over one spot and play at such a high level. So like I said, if we're going to shit on him, which we have done and rightfully so for his poor play, you know, we got to sing his praises when he does well. And that's one thing that I definitely can say about Pat Elflein this past game. He was definitely making the line adjustment calls. I saw him do that multiple times. I saw him alert PJ Walker to the blitz multiple times. You know, his recognition, his football IQ really took over. I know that he won the Remington Award when he was at Ohio State as the nation's best center as well. So, I mean, yeah, I get that it's college, but it does show that center is a position that he has performed at a high level on before. Now, he has played center in the NFL, and particularly when he was with Minnesota, and, you know, he looked a lot like what he looked at guard for us. So, again, you know, just have to be honest, but take it with a grain of salt. I would like to see how he does this week upcoming against the Washington football team, because the defensive tackles that he's going to face, this probably is the best duo of defensive tackles we're going to face all season, and Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne, two high first round draft picks. So, you know, good job, Pat Elflein at Arizona, but you're really about to be tested this upcoming week. This will really let us know whether it was just a one-time thing or if this is your natural position that you perform better at center. But I will give him his credit. He did a great job. Again, there was no sacks given up. I saw him put a couple of players on the ground in the run game, opening up nice holes for McCaffrey. There was several times where a lot of McCaffrey's big runs came off his A gap on either side, because we were doing a lot of quick trap blocking with the interior offensive line, and Elflein was definitely he was setting the tone there. So good job, but I need to see a bigger size moving forward.
Let's talk about this question. JD, I know you watched the film when you were grading PJ Walker and Cam Newton. What do you think about how Joe Brady opened up his playbook a little bit now that he's got PJ Walker and especially Cam Newton at his disposal now?
You would have to be some kind of inept if you didn't use Cam Newton's strength. So over the nine snaps, you saw him quarterback powers, quarterback draws, all that good stuff, quarterback running plays. Also, what I think I enjoyed seeing the most was the like the play action, like, oh, we're going to move the line, like Cam's going to take off, got Robbie out in the flat. So seeing more of that stuff, by open up, I take that to mean we're going to use plays like that, where the quarterback is going to be a running threat for Cam when he's in. But as far as PJ, if PJ is going to be taking the lion's share of reps, I think we're going to see a similar offense to what we saw versus Arizona, where at first it's going to be quick hitting stuff just to get us in a rhythm. Then we might take some intermediate shots. But I think now that Sam Darnold is somewhere nursing a scapula, I think that boy, how that boy break a scout? I don't know. But yeah, I think now that we have some actual quarterbacks that aren't afraid to let it rip and have a little bit more mobility, we're going to see the playbook open up a little bit. And you saw an example of that when we came out in the Wildcat and motioned Christian McCaffrey all the way to the wide side. And all that stuff was a good sign for me. Even after, like, what, 3 or 4 days of Cam being a Panther, you can kind of see us going into that bag a little bit. So I think that's something we can see moving forward. And I think we would be foolish to not see that, even though I think Joe Brady's play calling hadn't been our issue. But that's something definitely we're going to start getting in our bag a little bit.
Yeah, so for everybody that's following, I just pulled up the offensive line grades that were done by Smooth for this past game. He does an excellent job with this, so make sure you – he has them all on Instagram, Twitter. So if you follow his accounts, you can get the updates every week. Now, Kevin, when you look at these grades, you know, you look at this interior O-line, particularly Michael Jordan and Trent Scott, been playing very well the past – I mean, Trent Scott's not so much. He's been up and down, but Michael Jordan especially, I mean, since he's – got the starting role. I mean, he's kind of, Matt Rule even said he brings an attitude to the offensive line. Taylor Moten mentioned that as well. What do you see from Michael Jordan that's made him so effective the past week, number one and two? Does he remind you of that Trey Turner guy that, you know, he's going to be the heart and soul of the O-line, bring that nastiness, that attitude that other guys can feed off of?
Well, to answer your first part, what is about Michael Jordan? It's definitely his physical, nasty style of play. He definitely is the type of lineman that plays with that old school throwback mentality, you know, blocking to the whistle, getting guys down on the ground, just really just playing hard nose in your face. You're going to get tired of me blocking you, you know, type of guy. It's just not someone that's trying to just simply get in front of you and shield you. He's really trying to remove you from the field every chance that he gets. And I like that about him. You know, we're talking about a guy that's played at a very good level at Ohio State as well. So, you know, him and Pat Elflein got that Buckeye trend going on the offensive line between them two. But to answer your second question, as far as moving forward, I know you brought up Trey Turner. I was thinking more of the last great left guard we had there, which was Andrew Norwell. When you look at his style of play, and particularly just the hard nose demeanor. And, you know, once he also becomes more and more comfortable with, you know, communication, picking up, like I said, this is fourth game in. Again, this was somebody we picked up off the practice squad. So even though he's four games in and playing well, I think the best of him is yet to come. You know, I'm definitely hoping that I don't see no reason why we don't bring him back on a contract. I don't know if it was 1 year or 2 year, but I definitely like to see him get a full off season with us, get with Pat Meyer, some of the other guys in the off season and really develop here. We potentially, and I have to be cautious not to get too excited, because it's only been four games, potentially could have found the steal here. But it just comes so easy for him to just really play with a dominating, aggressive style. And another thing that with that style, he also plays with very good technique as well, which allows him to not only be nasty, but to effectively put himself in a position to you know, to execute his block at a high level. I think he's only been called on a couple of penalties so far. I don't think he's been called on any holding penalties. I think it's been a couple of false starts so far. So, you know, we'll live with that, with the growth and the return that he's given us. But yeah, he reminds me of more of Andrew Norwell, who was an undrafted free agent that we found in 2014. And his physical nasty technique is what I like the most about his play.
Yeah, you know, we don't want to kick a guy while he's down, but I think it's something that's worth discussing a little bit, JD. We saw how confident and how much faster P.J. Walker was playing than Sam Darnold before him. The offense seemed to move a lot more efficiently even before, even without the reps Cam Newton came off the field. I guess the question is, would you have liked to see P.J. Walker maybe have started, you know, a week ago, maybe after the Minnesota game? You think it was after the even after the Giants game, as late as that?
I definitely think we should have started P.J. earlier, but I think where we dropped the ball with our quarterback situation was not making a legitimate quarterback battle in training camp. So for all intents and purposes, when they traded for Sam Darnold, that was kind of the idea that this might be their guy. And the christening was when they picked up his fifth-year option without him even seeing him play a snap. That was letting us know, okay, the coaching staff is choosing this as their guy. But didn't take many preseason reps. And it's not surprising because he didn't take many preseason reps, his preseason kind of rolled over into the season. So you can see what once we started facing competition, the offense looked real vanilla, basic, not even attacking downfield. And you got to attack these defenses, even the good ones. You're going to have to attack them when they're going to pin their ears back or sit back in hook curl zones and play cover two all day versus your wide receiver core that's the fastest in the league. That don't make sense to me. But I think where we dropped the ball was not making a legitimate quarterback battle. And I think if we were to do that and go back and look at how fast PJ gets the ball out and how decisive he is with the ball, I honestly think PJ would have won that battle. I hinted to it in my roster stock reports that I was doing back in the preseason. After the PJ, after his first start, I mentioned how he could potentially get himself into a battle because he played so well. So I think that was the unfortunate part. And this is another knock on the incumbent coaching staff. A lot of their battles, they carried over to the regular season when they're supposed to be done in training camp, i.e. the kicker position. You bought nobody in to challenge Joey Sly. And now here comes the regular season. Now we're on our third or fourth kicker through this point in the regular season. That's not good. So same thing for quarterback, same thing for offensive line. We've had, six or seven or eight different combinations now at this point. So it's just something that we're going to have to see better from Coach Rule and those guys. And I think they still have that college mentality to where you could just plug and play any guy up until the point of the season. College teams have 100 man rosters, 90 to 100 guys on the sideline. So I think that's something definitely they need to get better at doing and spelling these position battles out in camp. Nobody's safe. You muted, Will.
Oh, sorry, y'all. I didn't know I was muted. What I was saying was right here, I have NFL's website, Next Gen Stats. They track this stat called time to throw. So what you can see is how long each quarterback takes before they, you know, get rid of the football. When you start at the bottom, you can see guys like Ben Roethlisberger. He's getting the ball out quick. Tom Brady, of course, ball comes out really quick. Mac Jones, you watch him, ball comes out very fast. When you get to the top of the list, you got Zach Wilson. You got Jalen Hurts, you know, the running quarterbacks. And right there is Sam Darnold, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So he's got the 6th longest time to throw in the league. And I think that's one thing you're seeing from the offensive line here with P.J. Walker getting the ball out quicker, and it's making it easier on the offensive line. I mean, I think that comes down to processing, you know, coming off his first read, panicking. We see when he has even at clean pockets, he doesn't seem comfortable. He's one of the worst in terms of completion percentage and QB rating from a clean pocket as well. So I definitely think not only the offensive line play was poor early in the season, but also it was what made it worse was the QB processing slow and holding the ball too long. As you can see, as he holds the ball longer than most quarterbacks in the entire league. So JD, is that something you noticed as you were grading the film on PJ Walker versus Sam Darnold?
Absolutely. You can see Sam, most of the time it's his footwork that's keeping him from getting the ball out fast. So he'll get into his drop back. Maybe he'll speed his drop back up a little bit. By the time his back foot hits, he's a little early for the quarter receivers. So he has to reset. And in the middle of resetting, one guy flashes open. He misses him. So he goes to the next read. And it's just like a snowball effect for Sam Darnold as far as timing goes. And that's what causes him to hold the ball. Also, you'll see him kind of second guess himself and his arm talent and pat the ball where he should just release and throw and trust his guy. I think another thing where Sam struggles is IDing what coverage he's facing and then making anticipatory throws to challenge that coverage. So like in man coverage versus Dallas, he has Terrace Marshall who stacks a guy in a slot. You can throw that throw to the sideline and Terrace Marshall's probably coming down with it if that DB doesn't somehow miraculously know it's going to be a 10-yard out. So I think that's what kind of held Sam back. And yeah, there's quarterbacks in the league that have some success and don't throw it with anticipation and kind of pat the ball, but it's not many of them. Like, maybe Kirk Cousins still shows a little bit of his impatience and pass the throw or doesn't make it on time. But most of the time, Kirk Cousins is getting that ball out fast. And we can't say that for Sam, even in a clean pocket. So I think that's something that, especially for a New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees type offense that Joe Brady likes to run, especially in the passing game where timing is everything. That's why it's hard for me to believe if there was a legitimate quarterback battle that Sam Darnold would have legitimately beat P.J. Walker if he wasn't just christened as the day one starter.
Right. When you look back at the next gen stats, look who had one of the fastest releases in this past week, P.J. Walker. You know, he only 3 other quarterbacks had a higher time to throw or a lower time to throw than he did. So you just saw the quarterback getting the ball out much quicker. I mean, you saw him stand in the face of pressure. He delivered that slant route to DJ, took a big hit from a free rusher, and delivered a strike. He got in trouble on that one. I think McCaffrey kind of missed on a corner blitz. He made the right read to Terrace Marshall, but kind of got knocked off his spot, and the ball sailed on him a bit on that first interception. But other than that, I thought he was pretty sharp and played well. You know, if he's not going to be a starter for the rest of this year, I think he at least earned himself another contract. And he'll be in camp, whether it's here or somewhere else, competing for either a backup job or a starting job somewhere. So I think he definitely helped his career with the performance he put on. So let's move ahead a little bit to talk a little bit about the Washington football team. So you're going to see a lot of familiar faces this week. Coach Ron Rivera, he's got Scott Turner as his offensive coordinator. And he's got a little bit different on defense. I think what they still got Jack Del Rio as the defensive coordinator as well. Washington's coming in. What are they, Kev? 3-6 right now. And I think they just got a big win over the Tampa Bay Bucks. On a quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, you know, he's kind of won that starting job. Been up and down this year. Hasn't really stood out. So I think they could use more consistency from that position. Now, Heinicke was a guy that you liked when he was in Carolina camp. Can you tell the fans a little bit about his game and what we can expect? You know, kind of a sneaky athletic guy, can run. You wouldn't expect.
Yeah, definitely was and still is a huge fan of Taylor Heinicke. You know, we're talking about someone that pretty much has known the Turners, you know, for pretty much most of his adult life. You know, he was being scouted by Scott Turner, I believe, when North was at Minnesota. And, you know, he was on the staff. And, you know, and then when North came to Carolina, brought Scott with him, you know, there was a reuniting there. And now that Rivera has took it up the road 85-95 to the nation's capital with Washington, you know, there again is that connection. So for me, what I like about Taylor Heinicke's game is that he's scrappy. He's not that guy that's going to wow you statistically per se and put up those big numbers, but he puts himself in a position where he can be clutch when it matters the most. You know, he could pick up that first down with his legs or with his arm. You know, we saw him go toe to toe with the GOAT, you know, Tom Brady in the wild card round last year and nearly pull off, you know, what would have been the upset of the year, you know, because Tampa was the wild card team, because New Orleans had won the division, and because Washington won the division, you know, they got the home game. So that's why it was Tampa at Washington last year. I'm not sure what the final score was. I think it was like a one score game or less, but Taylor Heinicke almost pulled it off, you know. So he's just a guy that, again, when you look at him, he's not going to wow you or blow you away, but he's someone that's is just scrappy, and he's going to fight you for everything. He can throw the ball with some zip on it, has shown a nice touch, definitely is very mobile, so he won't hesitate to pull the ball down. And, you know, when it's third and medium, you know, 5 or 6 yards and run to pick up the first, he has zero hesitations about doing that. He's definitely one of those whatever it takes type of quarterbacks to get the job done. So he's someone that we definitely want to be accountable for with his both his arm and his arm and his legs. But again, with the way that our defense is playing, not worried too much about it. But we do, as fans, gotta have a respect of what it is that he's capable of doing, because he definitely be one of those. Man, how does guy pull that off? He's one of those type of guys. And, you know, anytime you do beat the defending Super Bowl champs, you better have everybody's full undivided attention. But I definitely think that he's a scrappy player that we're going to have to hold accountable and see if we can force him into mistakes.
Okay, now, Jay, look at these skill players. Very underrated group, in my opinion. I mean, Antonio Gibson, a versatile back. I like his game in Memphis. He's a, you know, great between the tackles runner, you know, good, very quick, good feet, you know, change of direction, patient vision as a running back. He's a dual threat back as well. Very good as a receiver, can create mismatches for that offense. Curtis Samuel, unfortunately, has been hit with a groin injury this year and hasn't played a lot. I don't know what his status is for this week, but if it's like the past couple of weeks, I don't expect to see him much. But, I mean, Terry McLaurin, I mean, a guy, you know, consistently always getting bad throws, making 50-50 catches, you know, seems like a guy that's always open, but they can never get him the ball on time. Is Terry McLaurin the most underrated wide receiver in football right now, JD?
He definitely has an argument. And Terry, whether it's 50-50 balls, whether he's just outrunning your cornerbacks on the boundary, whether he's getting the ball short and looking for yak opportunities, he's a pretty much do-it-all wide receiver, and he gets overlooked because he doesn't have, like, the stature of other guys, or he just hasn't been doing it as long. But Terry is definitely a guy that will make you pay for not paying attention or not playing your assignment correctly as a corner. But we got something for that, so I'm not too concerned. Stephon Gilmore is playing a little bit more each week, so that's going to be his assignment. That's his primary guy is Terry McLaurin. But looking at the rest of their guys, Logan Thomas is on IR, but he's been mending that hamstring. He's working his way back, so it's possible we could see him coming off the injury report this week. If not this week, probably next week. I would say Ricky Seals-Jones, questionable. Those two tight ends are mismatch problems. Bigger guys can move, so we'll see what we how we handle that, especially in man coverage. From what I've been seeing on our film, A.J. Bouye is covering a lot of the bigger tight ends as far as cornerbacks go, and also we have Jeremy Chinn. So they could opt to pull Jeremy Chinn back into like a box safety type role to cover some of these bigger guys with speed. So looking at their other receivers, Adam Humphries, solid, steady hand, not really going to wow you either way. But in the slot, he's definitely a guy you want to keep to. Deami Brown, go Tar Heels. So we'll see how they attack us. But Antonio Gibson is definitely somebody who's dynamic, who's been dynamic. He's their leading rusher right now with 500 yards. So that's something we're going to have to key to, and they're going to move him around and try to get these mismatches.
Kevin, you look at the Washington offensive line. You know, you look at Tyler Larson, who was our backup center for Ryan Khalil for so many years. We got Eric Flowers, who was a left tackle. You know, I guess he was considered a draft bust in New York because he didn't play well at all. They moved him to guard. Looked like he found a home. A lot of injuries across the board. What do you see here from their offensive line, and how do you think our defensive line? Should this be another meeting at the quarterback type performance for our defense?
Yeah, I definitely think that this is an opportunity for our defensive line, in particular our defensive tackles, to make a huge impact in this game. Now, they do got a stud on that line. His name is Brandon Sheriff. He plays right guard. So he's usually responsible for whoever plays like the three technique position. Now, whoever goes up with him consistently, they're going to have someone that's fully capable of giving them all they can stand and more. Brandon Sheriff is definitely certifiable. I think he got a big contract this past offseason. He is recognized as one of the top 10 guards in this league. So he definitely someone that deserves our respect. Now, after him, the drop-off is really, really significant. Again, former Panthers backup center, as you mentioned, Tyler Lawson. He got the smarts, but a lot of his physical limitations, in spite of him having a reputation being like the strongest guy when he was here in Carolina in the weight room. Several times we've seen him just get put on skates and just slide back with ease. Eric Flowers, as you also mentioned, who was drafted as a top 10 pick, who was placed at left tackle, didn't work out, and switch him inside the guard. He has played more respectable there, but again, not someone to really you should be too concerned about. From that standpoint, they got a rookie at right tackle, Sam Cosmi, who actually has played surprisingly well at his position. He has very good technique. He was someone that definitely me and Big Smooth had checked out or during the scouting combine and definitely during the draft process. But he does have some limitations as far as with his footwork. And his ability to get to the second level. So he's at right now his rookie year. He's definitely, serviceable and, can be decent. But again, nothing to really wow you over. He's definitely nothing on a Tristan Wirfs level down in Tampa here. And as far as left tackle, Charles Leno Jr., veteran player, has decent length with his arms. But again, this should be a matchup that Brian Burns, Hassan Reddick, whoever plays edge for us, should definitely be able to see some opportunities here. So as a unit collectively, I give them a C minus as far as a individual unit. Now, they do have, I will say this though, they do have former Panther offensive line coach, John Matscow coaching them. And he's actually got these guys, in spite of what I just said with their breakdown, they're actually pretty decent in certain aspects. For example, their pass block win rate is actually, believe it or not, 68%, which is actually fourth best on the list. So, you know, I know I gave them overall as a unit a C minus, but the strength of their unit has been the protection of Taylor Heinicke. They do have the fourth best pass block win rate in the NFL. And as far as the run block win rate, they are at 79%, which is currently, I don't think it's been updated just from this past weekend, but that was near the top. So as a unit, they play solid together, but as far as individual matchups that we can take advantage of, I definitely think that we can, with our personnel, we can. So they'll again, like Heinicke, they'll definitely come out, and if you're not on your game, they can be effective. But if our individual talent takes over, then this is something that we should be able to have access to.
Yeah, something to note, one reason for their success of their offensive line, I think Pro Football Focus had them as the sixth-ranked offensive line in the league, but their best player grade-wise was Chase Roullier, who's on IR now. So that's why Tyler Larson is plugged in as the starter now. So they may see a drop-off now that their starting center got moved to IR. So I think you'll see Derek Brown, you know, going against Eric Flowers and Tyler Larson. This could be a big day for him against the Washington interior offensive line. Let's take a look at the defense. We'll work our way back to front this time. You know, you look at their secondary, JD, a lot of talented guys. I mean, William Jackson came from Cincinnati. He was a pretty talented cornerback. Kendall Fuller, most of us know about. Another solid corner they got there. Landon Collins, you know, very good start to his career in New York. Got a big contract in Washington. What's up? What stands out to you when you look at this secondary? And how do you see the Panthers wide receivers matching up?
They definitely have two good corners. I love these guys coming out of school. So William Jackson, all the tools to be a shutdown guy, ball skills, compress, can play man, all that great stuff. Kendall Fuller is a ball hawk, always has been. So those two top guys are going to be matched up on our two top guys. So that's going to be a good matchup to go back on film and watch. Shout out to Corin Elder. I see him on there. He's going to be their backup. Looks like he might be playing nickel. Benjamin St. Juiced out. So Troy Apke is going to be their speedy guy. So they could opt, if we put a Terrace Marshall out there in 11 personnel, they might switch up from Corin Elder to their more lanky, speedy kind of guy, Troy Apke. So they're a talented group, and it's actually low-key surprising because this is a Ron Rivera defense, and this isn't characteristic for him to have such good talent at cornerback, especially. Landon Collins in the secondary as well, kind of been quiet from him. I haven't seen how he's doing, but has been a guy to make plays in the past. Cameron Curl has been a guy to fly around too. So I think it's definitely going to be something where we're going to have to try to beat these guys fast. I think the longer the play goes for us this week, the more danger we're going to be in, especially with this front seven.
Now, I'm going to stay with you for a second, JD. I know you do a lot of college scouting as well. The first round pick, Jamin Davis, middle linebacker. You know, Ron Rivera always has to have that guy in the middle on all of his defenses, whether it was John Beeson or whether it was Brian Urlacher back when he was the defensive coordinator for Chicago, or our own Luke Kuechly. What do you think about Jamin Davis? Does he have that kind of upside?
He's definitely was an intriguing prospect for me. a good athlete at the linebacker spot, can move well. Right now he's sitting at 40 tackles. So he's a guy that's going to fly around for you. I think their best linebacker has been Cole Holcomb, though, flying around, getting tackles, coming from that weak side linebacker spot. So those two guys, I think the upside is really high. Jamin Davis is having a solid rookie campaign, though. So I expect these guys to play aggressive, downhill, kind of brand of football. Much akin to how we used to see, maybe not to the level of a Luke and a Thomas Davis flying around, but Ryan likes linebackers with that sideline to sideline athleticism and those guys that can come up and fit the run and not lose a step in the pass game. So I think that's something we're going to see from Cole Holcomb and Jamin Davis, but we'll see how they build upon their seasons.
Now, when you coming into the season, Washington had one of the most talented defensive lines in the league. They had four first round picks, Chase Young, Montez Sweat, and then the Alabama duo of Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen. Chase Young, unfortunately, tore his ACL against Tampa Bay, so he's out for the season now. Montez Sweat, I believe, has a jaw injury, correct me if I'm wrong. So he's on IR and will likely miss this game as well. So really, you're looking at a defensive line whose strength is on the interior. Deron Payne, Jonathan Allen, and a guy Matt Rhule coached at Temple, Matt Ioannidis. When you look at this defensive tackle rotation, Kev, what do you see? Do you think they can cause problems and give a test to our interior offensive line?
Hail to the yeah, definitely. You know, this reminds me a lot of you know, the concerns we had coming in, you know, week one with the Jets. You know, they didn't have much on the outside, but, you know, they their defensive tackle rotation was something to be concerned. Well, with Washington, in spite of the injuries to that you just mentioned to Montez Sweat and Chase Young, they still have more than enough talent with that interior defensive line to severely test our newly found interior O-line. Again, as I mentioned before with Pat Elflein, we're really gonna find out quick and fast just what he's capable of doing at center. Because the way Ron Rivera runs, you know, has his 4-3 defense, you know, you're gonna see both Allen and Payne line up as one technique to either side of the center. So definitely there's gonna be an opportunity to witness firsthand just what is what Pat Elflein can do. I'm definitely pulling for him, but this probably be the best defensive tackle combination we'll face the remainder of the season. You know, when you look at who they got come out the bit, Matt Ioannidis, he could easily be starting somewhere else. That just goes to show the depth that they have. But I mean, Deron Payne and Jonathan Allen, these are definitely going to be headaches. So the success we had last week with those quick trapping runs that we had, it might hit a little differently this week. I'm not saying that we should shy away and not try it, because, you know, we can't be scared of nobody, but we also have to know who we're facing and take advantage of their weaknesses, because everybody has weaknesses in their game, you know, because at the end of the day, they're still 3-6. So for as talented as their defensive tackle rotation is, it has got to the point where they've been able to dominate, take over game to help lead their team to more wins than what they have. But again, they just faced a very talented Tampa Bay Bucs offensive line, who many had viewed as one of the best in the league. So I definitely think that this is probably my biggest concern for offensive line this game is going to be in the B gaps and the A gaps with the defensive tackles of Washington.
Now, let me ask you this. If our defense gets a stop, you know, they got to settle for 3 points. You see who's kicking there. Yeah, put any fear in you right there.
Man, good old Joey Sly. I mean, he probably could kick from Washington to Charlotte and it'll make. I mean, the dude's leg strength easily is probably top five in the league. It's just always been that accuracy. But, you know, this past week, I think he was, what, 3 for 3 on field goals, 2 for 2 on extra points. So, hey, you know, maybe he's gotten out of that funk that he was in with us. You know, it's definitely – definitely going to be interesting when it's time for special teams kicking units to come on the field.
All right, this is the second time this year we faced Joey Sly because he was on the Texans when we played them in Week 3. Okay, we'll get to this last fan comment and get to final predictions. Can you break down the difference in yesterday's effort team-wise to what we've been looking at? I guess, JD, did you see a difference in the energy level of the team yesterday with Cam playing, or was it just, you know, more so on the offensive side of the ball while the defense has maintained a similar energy level throughout the season?
I think Shaq Thompson has done an excellent job of helping manage the energy level on the defensive side of the ball. I think those guys, it wasn't necessarily an energy level that changed on the defensive side. It's the simple fact that they were not on the field quick change without scoring points. So I think that goes a long way for defense. But we can't sit here and not acknowledge the Cam Newton effect. With Cam Newton on your team, the lows are just not as low and the highs are sky high. So that's on both sides of the ball, on special teams as well. So I think these guys having an actual alpha and a leader on the sideline definitely is going to change the energy of the game. And you could just tell that from everybody's post-game interviews. Everybody has noticed and felt it, even though it's not necessarily about Cam, he'll tell you. But he just brings that energy and that effort to the team. Running over one of their best defenders is going to juice your guys up regardless. So I think we have seen a little spike in our energy, especially on offense. We went from being beat like a redheaded stepchild on offense and not showing any fight at all to being the most swaggy group in the NFL last week. So it's obvious, and we all know the reason why, especially on offense.
All right, so let's get some final predictions. Kev, how do you see the Panthers Washington football team final score playing out?
Well, because it is a Ron Rivera coach team, I do expect this to be a fight. I don't foresee this being any type of blowout. Obviously, you know, coming back to Charlotte, it's going to be some, you know, different emotions and things of that nature. But again, I just feel like that our defense is playing on a higher level than theirs. And I also feel like that our offense just has more weapons at our disposal. You know, so at the end of the day, which one of their linebackers is going to check McCaffrey? You know what I'm saying? You know, and they definitely got secondary talent. But for me, I think this will be a mid-scoring game. I definitely see the Panthers forcing Heineken to some turnovers. And so I'm going to go with, I'm going to say Carolina 24, and I'm going to say Washington, I'm going to say 16.
That's a one-score game. How you see this playing out, JD?
Just looking at how these offenses match up, Washington is 23rd in pass yards. We're 24th. Washington is 18th in rush yards. We're 8th. So I think I can see a low-scoring game a la Ron Rivera. I'm going to say, oh, we're both tied 24th in TD scored. So I'm going to say, I'm going to call it, let's say 21 for, well, no, not 21. I'll call it 17-14.
Wow, very low scoring. Yeah, I think we'll put up a little bit more points on them considering both of their edge rushers are out. Our offense looked like it was clicking. I'll go 27-17 Panthers. So I think we'll have a little bit of a more comfortable margin. If you're into the spreads, I think the Panthers are a -3. So Vegas is predicting a nail biter as well. So we'll see. It should be a good game. It should be fun. Get to see the return of Cam Newton at Bank of America Stadium for the first time since 2019. Ron Rivera, I believe this is his first game back as well, because we played them in Washington last year. So the Turners will be back. So a lot of players, you know, used to play for Carolina are on that team as well. You know, DJ Moore's best friend, Curtis Samuel's on that team. Some of our backup linebackers, special teams guys, David Mayo, Jared Norris. This should be a fun game. Stadium should be packed for Cam. I already see they jacking up the Pricket prices that game. So if you haven't got them already, make sure you get your tickets. Want to be in the building for that week. I'll be in town for that game as well. Kev will be there. So look forward to seeing everybody. And any final comments before we sign off for the night, guys?
Yeah, for me, like I say, hell of a win. Glad we're back to 500. You know, I'm glad that Cam Newton has not only energized, you know, the team on the field, but also the fan base as well. Now, you know, with his fan base, you know, Cam Newton's going to bring out both sides. I'll leave it at that. But I'm just really looking forward to seeing, you know, now with better options at QB, what this team in year two of a rebuild could actually do. Not going to get ahead of myself, but I'm definitely feeling more optimistic now than I was a week ago looking at the quarterback position. So going to be patient, wait and see, but I'm definitely more excited.
You know, the playoffs started today. The Panthers are in the seventh seed. You think this is going to be a playoff team at the end of the day, JD, or too early right now?
I still think it's too early, but you definitely got to get to the bye week in a good spot for this to be a playoff team. I think our last performance bodes well. We're just going to have to see. It's just way too early to call it either way right now.
Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for tuning in tonight. The release of the podcast will probably come out either Thursday or Friday. If you haven't checked out the post-game show, go ahead and do that as well. It's up on YouTube. Be sure as we, you know, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Facebook. We'll have some more breakdowns of this previous big win over the Arizona Cardinals. Make sure you check out Panthers Den with JD and Smooth's Twitter page to get game grades for quarterbacks from JD and offensive lineman for Smooth. Other than that, looking forward to the game. Keep pounding. See you on Sunday. Hopefully pack the stadium, and let's get another W. Have a good night, everybody.